This particular player wasn't in the study that day, and I was out on the field because I would always have a media pass. I was out on the field, and I said to Dave Steeb, who was one of the all-time best pitchers with the Jays, I went out and said goodbye to him, said I was leaving to go home. And he said, "Why do you have to go? I always feel better when you're in the stands when I'm pitching."
This is Culture at a Crossroads with David Mann.
Joining me in conversation, we have former chaplain for the Toronto Blue Jays and current ministry man at Friends Peterborough, David Fisher. Thanks for making the time.
My pleasure. Good to be on with you, David.
So for the people who aren't able to see you like I am right now, because this goes out in audio, I see Peterborough Pete's plaque right behind you on the wall. Your life has really immersed in sports through your ministry. Do you have a favorite athlete, like, all time?
Well, people would expect me to say Mike Fisher is my favorite athlete because he's my nephew. But I don't know. John Beliveau was my favorite hockey player. And Julius Erving was my favorite basketball player. As far as baseball goes, that's difficult. I've got several. I guess Hank Aaron. I don't know, David, if you recognize those names from a past generation, but those would be my favorites in those three sports. But with the Blue Jays, people often ask me who is my favorite player with them, and that's hard to say because I got real close to a lot of them. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick a couple, I'd like to be John Olerud and Paul Molitor.
Well, before we get to your days with the Blue Jays, I just want to begin with the formation of your faith. Would there have been some key influences that you would point to that really directed you very vividly to the cross?
Well, I think the one that really was most influential in my life was my mother. And I was only 6 years old when my mother and I prayed together. We got down on our knees in the kitchen, and we were living in Toronto just for a couple of years at the time. Mm. And I just felt that I wanted to make that commitment to Jesus Christ as a young boy. And we had listened to a radio program called Young Canada Bible Hour. Mm. And it was my turn that week to read the scripture reading. So we turned on the radio just to hear what I sounded like. Wow. On the radio. It was Ephesians 2:1, which says, "And you hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and in sins." And I said to my mom, "What does quicken mean?" And she said, "That means to make alive." And she told me about the sacrifice of Christ on the cross for my sin. Even as a young boy, the Holy Spirit led me to trust my life to the Lord at that point in time. So ever since then, all those many years ago, I've been following him and serving him in different venues.
And then one has to ask, like, how did you get to be the chaplain for the Blue Jays? I imagine a pretty coveted position. I mean, as far as the appeal goes, but a lot harder than one would imagine, too.
Well, I began to write athletes. In 1975, I began writing athletes notes of encouragement, and I felt the Lord had called me to do that. My mother has always, and she's in heaven now, but she always wrote missionaries and Christian workers and family members these notes of encouragement, and I sensed that the Lord wanted me to do the same. So I began writing athletes in 1975, and I wrote to the founder of an organization called Baseball Chapel, and we became pen pals. He was an elderly gentleman, and we became very close. And then when the Jays came into existence in 1977, I was basically the only person in the Toronto area that he knew, and he asked me if I would consider taking on that responsibility as the chapel leader or the chaplain for the Blue Jays. And it didn't take me long to say yes. I just felt that the Lord had opened that door. And so from that very first Sunday in April of 1977, I got involved and did the same thing for 29 seasons with the Jays.
But this wasn't your full-time job. You still had something else going on.
At the first, for those first few years, I had the Christian bookstore in Peterborough, the Ambassador Bible Bookstore on Water Street. And so from 71 till 86, that was my source of income. But then in 77, started doing the chaplaincy work, and I would drive to Toronto on a Sunday morning, do a chapel service for the visiting team, and then one for the Blue Jays, and then one for the umpires, a short one for the umpires as well. So I was doing the two things simultaneously until 1986, when I sold the bookstore and then began doing the sports ministry full time. For a few years, I was doing the Montreal Expos. So I was back and forth between Toronto and Montreal for about 11 seasons. And then somebody else in Montreal, I handed it off to him, and he carried on the ministry with the Expos until they left town.
And how did you support yourself financially as a chaplain? You had to fundraise?
Okay. When I left the Christian bookstore in 1986, I had no source of income. I've always believed that God provides for those who trust him completely. George Mueller and Hudson Taylor were great heroes of the past of mine who never asked for money, but God always provided for them in very unusual and sometimes spectacular ways. And I felt that God would meet my needs, and so I trusted him. I had supporters who believed in what I was doing. So I was basically living by faith and trusting God to provide through a handful of people. I never had a really wide support base, but God provided in miraculous ways at time through people. And I was able to carry on that ministry, just trusting him to meet my needs.
Mm. What was it like just interacting with these professional athletes on a regular basis?
Everybody thought it was this wonderful thing I did, and I could rub shoulders with all these rich and famous people. But when I got to know them, they were just ordinary people like myself. They had a lot more money than I did, but they had the same struggles and difficulties. And I enjoyed what I did, but it was challenging at times. They would ask me questions, and I would struggle to find the right answer because I had no theological training. I mean, I studied the Bible for most of my life, but sometimes there'd be challenges that way. But they were just other people that put their pants on one leg at a time, like me. And it was a ministry that I felt God had called me to. At one point, somebody said to me, "Well, why are you working with these millionaires? They've got all the money they could ever want. They've got beautiful homes, beautiful wives, great expensive cars, everything they need." And I said, "Well, if God ever calls me to work with another group of people, I will. But these are the ones he has called me to work with." And I found out that they had just as many struggles as anybody else, sometimes more, because of the position they were in, the expectations placed on them. And so they would confide in me. I would meet with them one-on-one if they needed to talk. And I heard some pretty wild and crazy stories from people when they opened up and told me about their struggles. But I would always point them back to the Lord. And that was always my slogan. I was doing this to point people to Jesus. Looking back over the years, there are people that say to me, "If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be a Christian." So I thank God for putting me in that position.
Would there be an example of someone you could share who has vocalized that to you?
Yeah, there's somebody. I don't know whether I should mention his name or not, but he was a relief pitcher for the Jays back in the early 80s. He struggled. He wasn't one of the fan favorites because few times he would blow a game at the end of the game when we had a lead, and he'd blow it. But anyways, one Saturday, he really pitched a real stinker of a eighth or ninth inning. And so I sent him, I wrote a note of encouragement, and I brought it with me to the ballpark the next morning and gave it to him. That kind of opened up a friendship and a relationship with him that has stuck until today.
Wow.
A couple of years ago, I mean, we talk on the phone from time to time. A couple of years ago, he made a statement that I've never heard from anyone else before. He always called me Mr. Fisher. He never called me David. He was only a few years younger than I am, but I was Mr. Fisher to him. And so in this phone conversation, he says, "Mr. Fisher, if it wasn't for you, I'd be on my way to hell." Never heard anybody vocalize it that way before. I mean, that's just one example of somebody whose life was changed through my coming alongside him and just loving him and encouraging him and trying to be a friend for him.
At what point do you think during your chaplaincy you saw the most fruit in this ministry?
I don't think I can put any particular period. Some people say to me, "Were you with the Jays when they won the two World Series?" And I say, "Yes." But I don't attribute any of that to what I did. I was there for them and I enjoyed the ride, but I can't think of any time. There were certain times when we had greater attendance in our chapel.
Yeah. Yeah, like along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, there's a 25 man active roster in baseball. And at times we would have 12 to 15 players on a Sunday morning, and they wouldn't all be born again Christians, but many of them were. Right around the World Series time, there were about that many people coming to chapel. And so maybe what I was doing was that was a factor in them winning. It was a great bunch of guys, but I can't really put any particular time period to when things were most successful in their private lives.
Would you say you got a chance to kind of contribute to the culture of the Jays in those years?
That's a good question, David. I don't know. I don't want to lay claim to anything like that. But yeah, perhaps. I mean, during some of those years, we had kind of the highest attendance at chapel of any team in Major League Baseball.
Wow.
And so... but I can't claim any credit for that. It was just God putting me there for such a time as this. And I enjoyed those years. I mean, we had Bible studies every Wednesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. We would meet for Bible study during homestands. We never had as many in Bible study as we did at chapel, but we had some great studies with really committed guys. So those were good years, and that was around the World Series time, 92 and 93.
What sort of sense did you get being in that baseball realm? As to, you alluded that they're, you know, they had real struggles too, but were there things that were really pertinent to this, the atmosphere that they were in, that you could tell were some sort of idols or things that you commonly had to help them diagnose and address?
I can't think of any things in particular. I mean, my wife, Carol, she did a Bible study for the wives.
Oh, really?
And she would have guest speakers come with her. A couple of ladies in particular would often come. And the wives would often talk about their struggle with their husbands being on the road and all the temptations that were involved with a big league athlete on the road, out of town, somebody with a lot of money. That came up often in conversations with me. Just the temptation, dealing with temptation was something, because, I mean, I saw it firsthand. Sometimes I'd be at the hotel in Toronto where the visiting team stayed, and I'd be just sitting in the lobby with a player, and there'd be women that would make themselves available to these guys. And I mean, if you don't have a strong faith or a strong commitment to your wife, I mean, you could go astray just because of who you are and the money that you have. So dealing with temptation was something that husbands and wives both had to struggle with.
And so did you go to like pretty much every home game during these years?
No, I would be there on Sundays and Wednesdays. I'm just recalling a funny statement that was made to me one time. I was there for a Bible study. I went out this particular player wasn't in the study that day, and I was out on the field because I had a I would always have a media pass. I was out on the field, and I said to Dave Steeb, who was one of the all-time best pitchers with the Jays, I said we went out and I just said goodbye to him, said I was leaving to go home, and he said, "Why do you have to go? I always feel better when you're in the stands when I'm pitching." And nobody had ever said that before. And so I felt guilty. So I thought I better stick around for a few innings, but I always knew I had to drive back home to Peterborough. But nobody had ever said that before. And I appreciated his comments. He was a good friend. And I've got his book that he wrote. I think it was called Someday I'll Be Perfect. He did pitch a no-hitter for the Jays, but I've got the book in the bookcase behind me here where he inscribed a comment to me, but he was one of my favorites.
Mm.
Not just because he said that, but he was just a good pitcher. I can tell a story about him that's one of the highlights of the years I spent with the Jays. There was a pitcher that we got from Atlanta Braves in a trade. His name was Joe Johnson. And Joe came to the Jays partway through the season. I think it was 1985, maybe. And so Joe became close friends with Dave Steeb. And they were on the road. It was a road trip in Chicago. Joe had the pleasure and the joy and the thrill of leading Dave Steeb to Christ and introducing him to Christian life. So the following Sunday, when they were back in Toronto, Dave Steeb came up to me, came into the chapel room where we had chapel, and he said, "I did it." I said, "You did what?" Mm. He says, "I gave my life to Christ last weekend, last Sunday in Chicago." And I was thrilled. Mm. And that's just one of those things that happened that I'll never forget. That was more important than him telling me that he likes me to be in the stands when he pitches, just telling me, I did it. It was thrilling.
And he had someone like you he could confide in with that and feel safe to share that and get encouragement. And he started coming out to studies and so forth more regularly after that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
The funny thing, it's not funny, it's very interesting that sometimes his teammates, when he was pitching, and if an infielder made an error or somebody in the outfield didn't throw the ball into the right base, he would kind of turn around and glare at them as if to say, "What did you do that for?" Players said that after he made that commitment to Christ, that the way he was on the pitching mound was different. He didn't do that. He didn't stare them down and look disgusted with them in the same way that he used to. And so, therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. And he was a different man.
Wow. World Series, 92-93. Did you take in all those games in Toronto?
No, I didn't. I mean, I don't think I was. I mean, I took in a couple of games in the 92 series in Toronto. And in the 93 series, my wife Carol and I and brother-in-law and his wife, four of us went to that game when they won the World Series. So I'm sitting in the stands and the Phillies are leading the Jays near the end of the game. I am being kind of pessimistic that night. I thought, gee, that's going to be, Jays are going to lose and they'll be discouraged because they could have won the series. So I got out of my seat and went down outside the clubhouse and waited outside. You have to wait 20 minutes after the game before you can go in. That's just a rule for the media. So I'm standing there, and then I hear this noise. I was under the stands, and there's an eruption of sound. I thought, sounds like something good must have happened. So I couldn't see what was going on because I was down in the bowels of Skydome, as it was called. And then these reporters had come down the elevator and they were running towards the Jays clubhouse door. And I said, "What happened?" "Joe Carter hit a home run. We won the game. We won the World Series." And so I was right at the door and they opened it and I was the first one in. And I was part of that celebration in the clubhouse, and I had never been in a situation like that before. I got soaked with champagne, and it was an exciting night. But the funny thing is, the year before in 92, when they won the World Series, Carol and I were watching the games on TV, and when they won, our phone started ringing and people were calling me and congratulating me as if I had something to do with it, which I didn't really, but it was funny that the phone kept ringing. But it was good. It was exciting both of those years, but just glad to be a little small part of it.
David, we don't have too much time left, but I do want to just follow up with you on something you said earlier. If God ever called me to work with another group of people, I would do that. And that's what you're doing today. You've been doing that for the last decade plus. Totally different. The elite athletes of the world, and now you're with the down and out downtown Peterborough. How has God used you in this season?
To be honest with you, this has been more rewarding, being down here on George Street, the main street of Peterborough, looking out and seeing what's going on, seeing homeless people with all their possessions in their grocery cart, up and down the street, people begging, people coming in here, looking for food and money. And I feel that this is where God wants me right now. It's totally different from where I was. Every day there's new situations, people coming in with struggles, people that are with addictions, people that are battling poverty. Somebody was in today in his wheelchair. He has no place to call home now. He's living over at Millennium Park. Can't even get out of his wheelchair to sleep. He just sits in his wheelchair and at night, and his wallet got stolen last night. He told me this morning. It's just a whole different group of people. God has given me a heart for this group of people. I love what I do. We do income tax preparation for people free of charge. The only place in Peterborough that does this year-round. And a lot of these people are on social assistance. Many of them haven't filed their taxes for several years, and so they miss out on some of their benefits. They don't get their GST rebate or their Trillium benefit. They haven't for several years, and we just sit down and my partner here, Stephen Donaldson, he does the tax filing. And then people start getting their benefits. It's just amazing. We've done over 1,500 returns this wow. year already. And it's just the two of us in the office. But I get all the information from the clients and give it to Stephen. He files electronically. I help people with seniors with their application for old age security and Canada Pension. Filling out forms is a very... It's a real struggle for a lot of people. And so people, Service Canada in their office just down the street from us, they send all the clients our way, people that need applications filled out. We do that. It's just, I mean, if you sat with me here in the office for a day, you'd see every imaginable thing happening because we're right in the heart of downtown. I call it the underbelly of our community right here because you see it all. I'm glad that God allowed me to be here and to serve him in this place. As you said, it's a totally different environment, but he's here with me. And I trust that people that come in will sense that this is a place where people love them and people care about them because we do. That's the transition that God has led me through, and I'm so grateful that he did it.
If you could use one word to describe what it means to shepherd well, that's the terminology that you've used, and that's really what you've been your whole life, whether it's an elite athlete or someone on the margins, what does it mean to shepherd well for David Fisher?
I can't do it in one word. But the two phrases that I've always used was a listening ear and a compassionate heart.
Okay, six words. That's pretty good.
Well, that's on our brochure, listening ear, compassionate heart. And that's what I personally have to offer. I've always been a listener. moved by compassion, as Jesus was when he saw those who were down and out. And that's what I want to be, somebody that people can come to and feel the empathy and the care that the Lord has put in my heart to share with them.
Amazing. We'll have to end on that note. Really appreciate you sharing about this amazing life that God has given to you on this earth. David Fisher from Friends Peterborough, former chaplain of the Jays, also chaplain of the Petes. Didn't have time to get into that, but thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, David.
Thanks for listening today. A reminder that you can access any of our episodes when you head to the Culture at a Crossroads podcast. We do invite you back next week as we once again explore the intersection of faith and culture in Canada, helping to better equip you in following Jesus.